Are we live now?
I'm recording.
You're listening to Mumbrella Cast.
Mumbrella Cast.
Welcome to a television-focused edition of the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Hannah Blackiston.
Joining us to break down the week in media and marketing is Mumbrella News Editor Paul Woolbank.
Hello.
And this week's special guest, MCN CEO Mark Frayne.
Hello.
This week's topics:
how the ABC won the election ratings,
Game of Thrones record-smashing finale,
7 issues a profit warning,
and The Voice returns for 9. So let's get to this week's guest, Mark Frayne, or Frayne, as pretty much everybody in the industry knows him. Mark took the helm of MCN last year after the departure of Anthony Fitzgerald, MCN being the sales arm of the Foxtel and the Fox Sports channels, among others. Now, Mark, you've been with MCN pretty much since the beginning, I think since 2003. You've obviously seen a lot of changes and a lot of challenges, and I wrote about it when you stepped up, but just it felt like you had so much on your plate when it sort of came along, because you had the changes going on with almost 3 parts. The changes going on with 10 going their own separate way, so you sort of were having to see staff go because of that. You've got the changes to the model of subscription television and the challenges to that business model of streaming, and they've just got the general challenges that seems to be a bit of a soft market at the moment. For most of the time Mumbrella's been going on, you've been leading a team which always seems to win. It must be a completely different challenge when you're facing headwinds. How has the year been? How have you coped with that different world?
Yeah, I think you summed it up beautifully. I mean, it has been a kind of tumultuous kind of 12 months. And from my perspective, went in there with my eyes wide open on what some of the challenges were. Like any new opportunities, there's things you don't foresee, and certainly a rapid declining advertising market to the extent that we've seen wasn't one of those that was on the horizon from my perspective. You mentioned the 10 exit, clearly a corporate decision from CBS. And you can kind of go 2 ways with that. You can look at the business and go, yes, we need to be kind of smaller. We need to be kind of more efficient. Or you can go, we need to be that, but we also need to look at where the market's kind of going and where do we need to evolve to. So from my perspective, yes, a lot on, but it was the right time to look at our business in the eyes of our customers, which are kind of growing and varied, i.e. agencies, kind of clients direct, strategic agencies. The list kind of goes on in terms of, I suppose, the opportunities to interact with kind of clients. So took it on as an opportunity to reinvigorate the MCN business and how we went to market. And kind of, I think in this industry, you make your own luck and you make your own kind of timing. And I think fortunately, at the time that decision was made from a CBS perspective, Foxtel was starting to reinvigorate your business, their business, sorry. And you talked earlier about the changes to pay television businesses globally, from linear broadcast to more streaming-based services. And kind of Foxtel was starting that kind of journey. So from my perspective, it was an opportunity to embrace that journey that Foxtel was on, and look to reflect the MCN operating model to benefit from what they were doing.
And how has it affected you as a leader, just sort of providing some direction through all of those challenges? Because it must have been a really tough year.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't without its energy-sapping kind of days and nights. And I kind of remember day one like it was yesterday, and I think it was day 3 that I took the call from Paul Anderson. And post that call, first thing I did was to grab the exec team and the management team and inform them, and the next thing I did,
Paul Anderson being the CEO of 10,
yeah, correct, was to inform them, and then secondly inform the entire business of the decision. And coincidentally, in hindsight, I think this was a blessing that we also had Adweek that week. And at 10:30 that day, I was on a panel with Rod Prosser, Kurt Burnett and Michael Stevenson to talk about the future of television.
These are the sales bosses of 7, 9 and 10.
Yeah, and that gave myself and the MCM business to get on the front foot in terms of comms to the market and, again, comms to our own people. And that's kind of the philosophy that I've led right from the start, is that the people communication was vital to get through what was going to be a tumultuous period for the business. And in kind of change, one thing you need is good communication. No one likes kind of surprises. And if the team are informed on the journey and the timelines we're on, whether they remain or whether they exit the business, there's a level of kind of calmness that can provide.
And I remember, again, at the time when I sort of asking media agency bosses what they made of your appointment, of the, you know, the changes going on at 10 at the same time. I sort of asked someone, you know, the challenges of your job, and someone described it to me, and I won't say who it was, but you might just from the phrasing be able to work out. One media agency CEO said, it's a prick of a job. Do you recognise that sort of point of view? Would you agree with the media agency sentiment that your job is as challenging as that?
Whether I describe it as a prick of a job, I'd probably go it was a privilege of a job to, number one, take the helm of the MCM business, having been part of it for over 10 years. And secondly, the level of work, which could be in brackets the prick part of it, was actually really enjoyable and energizing. Don't get me wrong, there was kind of plenty of sleepless kind of nights as you're working through multitude of decisions. And that's probably one thing that I look back on. I've never made or been forced to make as many decisions in such a short period of time. Hopefully, myself and the team got most of them right. And the ones we haven't got quite right, we're kind of addressing and evolving now.
Well, let's talk about your team. Talk us through your structure now and who you see as your key executives.
Yes, obviously, most recently we announced the hiring of David Roddick as Chief Sales Officer, ex-AdShell and ex-kind of news in the UK and other digital businesses. And I think that's a good and a very recent example of bringing in some diverse experience to the MCM business. MCM, from its inception, has been a TV-led business, and therefore the depth level of TV talent is well known and well respected in the market. So from my perspective, it's been about evolving that talent, and not necessarily involving in different media types, just evolve in terms of kind of thinking.
And then I guess you also sort of structure yourself with representation in each of the states as well.
Yeah, correct. So we've managed to maintain some consistency in those markets. And secondly, I think the opportunity that those changes provided myself and MCM was many of those execs that have been 2IC or kind of just waiting for that next step, we're able to provide that for them. And I think that's a really healthy evolution for any business, that those that have been waiting in the wings get their opportunity to step up on a platform and put forward new thinking, new ideas. And I think we've been the beneficiary of that.
There was also an announcement a couple of weeks ago about Foxtel in Oxford, which was kind of pitched as a new take on the upfront model. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and also why MCN felt the upfront model needed a shake up?
Yeah, sure. I mean, interesting. I've just come from Foxtel in Oxford just now to our opening all-staff address. It goes back to what I was saying before about the people of MCN first before the rest of the market.
And for non-Sydney siders, that's Oxford Street in Sydney.
Oxford Street in Paddington, correct. And the reason why and it's part of the way we restructured MCN to make sure we engage differently in the market, was that we felt that if you look at the decisions that clients have got to make, number one, they're accessing more information themselves, more often, more real-time data coming back to them in terms of what's working. And therefore, we felt as a business that we owed it to our clients and partners to communicate more often to them in terms of the changes to our business. And critically, going back to the point I mentioned on the data insights they've got in their own businesses, how does MCN mirror that and provide them a much more direct, real-time access to our data through the Foxtel platform, whether that be viewers, whether that be return on investment. So it was about how do we have more continuous conversations with those kind of clients, which just gives greater control and power for them to make better and faster decisions.
So you've taken over an old cinema space, is that correct?
That is correct.
And so, yeah, well, nobody's seen the inside of it yet. Talk us through, what is it actually, have you seen, you've been inside it presumably?
Yeah, we'll share some pictures in kind of due course, but I mean, today, being in Foxtel and Oxford for the first time, it was literally 6 weeks ago that I kind of gave the green light to the MCN comms team led by Sarah Tucker and the Alfred team, who really generated the original idea to start work.
Alfred's the sort of design agency.
Correct, yeah. The concept. And when you see the original pictures to what I presented in today, it is incomprehensible in terms of the pictures don't clearly show and highlight the smell of the venue and like the odor. I mean, it's a 10 years of unused kind of cinema and old kind of carpets and old kind of wall. You could picture and probably smell the scene.
Do you know, I used to actually live on Burke Street around the corner, so I remember it just before it closed, and I think it smelt like it then as well.
Well, it's a lot better now, let me tell you, with new carpets, new liquor paint and new lighting and new 4K equipment. But what's fascinating, even last night, we've re-rendered the entire front look of it. So it looks like a premium venue from the outside. And we're in there yesterday with the MCN management team just talking about how do we utilize this venue in many different value-adding ways. And there's members of the public, and maybe to you like yourself, Tim, that were stopping, almost pushing the door, is this reopened? And you can, I think that for me, outside of the advertiser benefit and the agency kind of benefit, shows the real intrigue of kind of what we've done. That's before you get through the doors.
And is it something you'll sort of lend to media agencies if they want to host a client event themselves and that sort of thing?
Yeah, 100%. I think the opportunity for us to sit down with agencies and with advertisers and go, how do you want to use this? I mean, how do we collectively use it to educate, inform, excite and entertain our clients about Foxtel? And then, to your point, by default, let those agencies and clients immerse themselves in that space for their own use, whether that's creative thinking, whether that be a dealership conference. I mean, there's so many uses for that space in a really premium central setting.
And how big is the investment in it?
Well, that's the I'm not going to go into the detail, but that's the amazing thing about I think a traditional upfront, whether that be a TV or whether that be a digital kind of upfront. I mean, and you know the cost of events, they can go from $500,000 to $3 million, and we've been able to secure this space for over 12 months for not a lot, is all I'll say. So we are, I would say, to summarize, we're in front. We're in front, and the level of frequency and impact of the use, every use is only going to make it more and more cost efficient.
So, Mark, you mentioned before about listening to clients. One of the things that's been popping up quite a bit recently with Foxtel, particularly with Sky After Dark, is the reputational issues that are around those programs. And what are you hearing from the market about that? And is there a pushback against advertising on these programs?
I think we've got to be, as an industry, I think everyone is more mindful of brand safety. I think TV as well as the digital landscape has got to be attuned to have the measures and policies in place to manage that. And I think from our perspective is that there's content that is appealing. There's content that drives audience, and there's certainly local content to integrate brands down to the MCN team to make sure that we provide, as per the client's brief, what's right for them. And we embrace what they don't want to be part of. I think that's our own kind of due diligence has got to step up there.
I wonder whether, and this is one I normally have to sit down and write something before I can actually fully understand what I actually think. And the whole issue with Sleeping Giants, which is the sort of campaign on social media, in particular Twitter, and sort of targeting certain shows on sort of in the evening slots on Sky News, and then tweeting brands whose ads they see on it. I must admit, regardless of whether I agree or disagree, and in all honesty, probably mostly disagree with the sort of politics of Rowan Dean on Insiders, whoever it might, Outsiders, whoever it might be, there's a little bit of me that feels quite uncomfortable with the idea that a relatively small campaign group, you know, just in just a few tweets can kind of potentially scare off clients. And it feels like a genuine communications challenge. And how do you guide a client through that and, you know, still have commercial support for, you know, a particular show for a particular audience? How do you think about that challenge of that relatively small but organized group and how you talk to clients about whether they've got a bigger voice than they might actually really have?
Yeah, such a great question. I think from our perspective and Sky News alike and the broader News Corp group, increasingly kind of frustrating that based on those handful of people, they do seem to kind of charge an alarming kind of sense of awareness and comms direct to clients. And from an MCM perspective, working through that, it certainly highlighted that probably across many clients that their own level of kind of social policy and social management needs some work. I think you look at a lot of businesses and there is a team in the corner that are responsible for social activity. And quite often they're not linked to the C-suite kind of level. And that's not just from a marketing perspective, that's from a CEO perspective as well. And therefore, quite often when based on the Sleeping Giants activity, the social team have removed ads or requested to be removed, the gap of communication between that social team and the exec team is cavernous. And once we kind of work through that, quite often you see, and we are seeing many of those businesses go, no, the reason why we're advertising on Sky News as an example or any other channel, quite frankly, is the audience that channel is reaching is the audience that we want to kind of speak to.
The quiet Australians.
The quiet Australians, beautifully put.
Well, just on that, Mark, given the success of Game of Thrones, which we'll come to later in the podcast, how do you see working through the different demographics there? Because that Sky After Dark demographics are much, much older one than I imagine ideally you'd like to have.
Yeah, I think if you look at the way that television or media has been kind of bought and sold, it hasn't changed much. The last kind of 30 or 40 years, the notion of people 25, 54 as the right audience often gets described as the most valuable audience. That's kind of changed. And I think any advertiser or every brand will often, if they do any segmentation of their business, they'll look at the most high value segment and ensure that they look after and love that customer segment. And on that basis, you're starting to see that 55 to 65 year old bracket to be the most valuable segment. So I would argue there is certainly a reassessment of what the most valuable segment of the population is. So whether that be 25 to 60 or 25 to 65, I think the bracket needs to grow to make sure we're not actually missing out or alienating probably the most valuable part of the population.
And I suppose to demographics as well, one of the opportunities of addressable TV is to give a few more options around talking to, you know, more defined audiences.
100%. It goes back to some of the earlier things we were talking about the benefit of the timing with MCN and Foxtel. Foxtel is investing heavily to the point of a greater investment that I've ever seen into advertising capability and addressable TV being part of that. And that's not just addressable TV in the sense of IP, i.e. Foxtel Go, Foxtel Now, and most recently kind of KO Sports. That's looking at also the volume of audience through the set-top box and building addressability into that broadcast stream, because from an MCM perspective and likewise for other TV businesses locally and globally, that still remains where the lion's share of revenue is spent and transacted. So if MCN can bring addressability to that size of audience, i.e. we're currently a national signal, there's many advertisers that will embrace that we currently don't carry.
And where do you think you're at in comparison perhaps to your competitor set when it comes to addressable TV? Because I almost got the impression that some investment had gone on before you took the helm, and it almost feels like you sort of put that to one side and started again.
Yeah, I think MCN probably had a head start in the data space, certainly with MultiView, which is our 200,000 home panel providing insights to our audience. I'm kind of questioning, but you look at what kind of Nine has done in particular, really invested heavily in its BVOD platform and its logging data. And many kind of questioned, was that the way to go? I think they've successfully proved that they've built a data product on the back of that. The benefit now for MCN, I suppose, seeing the acceptance of that, is knowing that we're a subscription-based model across all devices, and we're now harnessing the power of that data across set-top box and IP. So I don't think it's necessarily a case of kind of who's ahead. I think it's just based on the value that we're providing to our customers. So we've got a bit of work to do, but with a reinvigorated and highly invested team at Foxtel from a data perspective, we've got an amazing opportunity to make rapid gains.
So what about in the wider look at the business? Is there any chance going forward that MCN could be consolidated into News Corp? Obviously, News Corp being a majority shareholder in Foxtel, is that something you could potentially see on the horizon? Or is it even something that maybe there could be a bit more of a partnership there?
You must get that question
a lot. Yeah.
That's my favourite question. And one that I'm kind of happily to lead into. I think from an MCN perspective, we are now 100% powered by Foxtel, for want of a better term. And kind of my role as running that business is to secure and write as much revenue as we can for Foxtel. The better MCN does, the better Foxtel does. And that will get kind of laddered up into a broader News Corp structure. So my focus is all around writing revenue for Foxtel. But I think you use the right word. A kind of partnership kind of makes sense. And partnership in the eyes of the client and the customer, it's not going to be right for everyone. And that's why through the News Corp Come Together upfront program, they talked about how MCN and News Corp are trialing integration on various kind of clients. And I think that has a real strategic benefit for those clients that are thinking that way, whether that be an idea that's generated on television that can extend through print and into a broader news digital landscape, or likewise an idea that's generated in print that can come all the way through the television. I think if we enter that partnership, which we are, on a focus with media neutral ideas and media neutral thinking, then all businesses, kind of News Corp, Foxtel, MCN, will share in the commercial success.
I was just thinking it might actually be a perfect partnership for some brands, especially with the connection between maybe the News Corp and the Sky After Dark. It might be, you know, if you can start delivering towards brands who want to target that kind of audience, then you're delivering a perfect package for them.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think what we discuss and what we kind of see moving forward will be built on very sound strategic thinking. I think aggregation, integration for the sake of it can actually be detrimental, particularly if it's done at speed. So it's how kind of, and conversations with the News Corp team are about doing it smartly, doing it kind of correctly, and making sure that the eyes is firmly on the customer.
I remember somebody once said to me, they were talking at the difference between Foxtel and Fox Sports. And this would have been 2 or 3 years back. And they were saying the thing about Fox Sports is you walk in, it feels like a News Corp culture. You walk into Foxtel and it doesn't. When you walk into MCN, does that feel like a News Corp culture?
That's a challenging kind of question, I suppose, given my experience of the different kind of cultures. I think the MCN culture feels like the MCN culture, which is kind of young, vibrant, kind of energetic, and a business that wants to kind of push the boundaries. Relating that easily for me, that's replicated in Fox Sports and Foxtel. In just the sense of creating one winning team that wants to push the boundaries to do things differently. And I think MCN and myself, we sit in the fortunate position that if Foxtel and Fox Sports are driving that, then we're the beneficiary.
So having taken over the reins a year ago, are you where you'd like to be now, Mark?
I think in many regards, probably ahead of where I thought we'd be in terms of structure, in terms of the personnel we got on board, and probably also in terms of the stability that the team's got. To one of Tim's points earlier, the thing that's probably been most disappointing, if that's the phrase, is the advertising market. I think we've come out strongly in 2019 and competed very well versus industry benchmarks, but haven't quite seen the benefit of that. The one thing that we're probably not where I'd like to be, and I think that's part of the journey that myself and the team have been on, is coming through the 10-piece, re-establishing a new structure. It's probably highlighted a few areas now that have evolved, even in 9 months, that I recognize that we need to invest more in moving forward. And that's probably the area that I go, hindsight, everyone can have a degree in hindsight, probably a couple of areas we should have done more with early, but we're going to rectify that moving forward.
Now, we just you touched on KO a couple of times, the sports streaming product, still relatively new. You right at the start of your career, you studied as a sports journalist. Where did it all go wrong?
Well, it all went wrong when I kind of worked out how much money you could earn in journalism, and media sales looked a lot better alternative, to be
honest.
Why
is everyone nodding? And talking about KO, how do you think about the ad component of KO?
Yeah, it's got to be, and this is the principle that we are following. If Foxtel and the broader related businesses are focused on delivering a premium entertainment experience for Australians and Australian kind of households, the same must apply to other devices. So from an MCN perspective, it's about firstly recognizing the customer experience that they want to kind of deliver, and therefore complementing that with a clean, smart advertising experience. So we need to treat kind of KO with that principle in mind.
And that means being particularly respectful of live sport, presumably, you know, not making somebody miss the important moments through an ad.
Yeah, live sport, certainly new ad models that are kind of different, leveraging capability like dynamic ad insertion, not to run into a session of media bingo and lingo, but that capability just provides a real seamless experience for the customer, and that's what we've got to be focused on.
Well, next, how Game of Thrones smashed the ratings. Don't worry, there will be no spoilers in this next part of the conversation if you happen to be listening and haven't caught up on that final ever episode of Game of Thrones, which went out on Monday, which was a record breaker for Foxtel. Paul, you wrote the ratings story about this one.
Yeah, and it really was a great success for Foxtel, by far the highest watch show on Foxtel ever. Interestingly enough, the previous three shows, I think it was, were also Game of Thrones episodes. And prior to that, it had been a rugby international between Australia and New Zealand. I think the semi-final of the 2011 World Cup was the previous one.
In terms of the numbers, it's that rare thing of a million plus subscription audience.
That's right. Had it been up against the free to airs, it would have been on a national basis, it probably would have been number four.
But Hannah, you're a Game of Thrones fan?
I am a Game of Thrones fan, and I did watch it on the night, but I will not throw in any spoilers. Yeah, we've kind of been watching it this season really perform incredibly well. I think this season has been the highest rating season of Game of Thrones, and it is that thing that just keeps picking up because of all the chances to watch it, all the ways you can watch it. Obviously, the BVOD numbers just keep delivering on it.
Friend, have you been watching as it goes out? Have you been stacking it up on your IQ?
I've been stacking it up and catching it where I can, depending what the family will allow. but yeah, from a Fox and MCM perspective, I mean, just number one, clearly amazing kind of world-class phenomenon in terms of kind of content. But for us, outside of the records that it's kind of broken, it really shows you the journey we need to be on with our advertisers. You mentioned the BVOD and the IP kind of viewing numbers. When the final reconciliation of numbers come out, I mean, that million plus number will probably be pushing close to two. And that just shows the consumption on different devices, which, whether it be kind of KO, whether it be Foxtel Now, we'll be very smart about how we think about that kind of moving forward, because it's kind of a future model of consumption with a brilliant piece of content.
And for the advertisers, I guess it's more of a sponsorship model than an advertising model as well.
Yeah, and I think it also, I mean, Game of Thrones is unique in so many regards, but the opportunity for sequential messaging through different content on different devices, something that we've got to explore given the varied asset base we've got to play with.
Hannah, in a word, were you, without no spoilers, were you satisfied with the ending?
No. In a word.
Okay, we won't go into it because I don't want to do any spoilers. And another thing that I was quite interested by was not coincidental timing, obviously. Black Mirror, the amazing Netflix sci-fi series, dropped its season trailer. And it kind of points towards that competition for viewers now. Where do you think Foxtel goes from here when it comes to attracting audiences? Because Game of Thrones was a big tentpole.
It was a very big tentpole. And actually, so yeah, Netflix dropped Black Mirror and HBO themselves, they got in with Westworld just before Game of Thrones. So I imagine they're facing
season three of Westworld.
Yes, I believe so. I'm not a watcher. But I imagine they will be facing a similar concern in the US as to what Foxtel might be facing in Australia, which is, do you now face an exodus of people abandoning your platform? But I do think there is obviously plenty of good television out there. We're in a real golden age at the moment. And I think what Netflix and HBO are doing is very correctly pointing people towards their next obsession, because that's very much where we sit. But I would be interested to get your take on it, Mark, as to whether I would imagine Foxtel were prepared to lose some people after this, but is that a major concern for you?
I think, yeah, your initial point around the depth of content is where it kind of gets to. And Foxtel is doing an excellent job in now kind of pushing what the next run of kind of content looks like. And it's not just sport. I mean, personally, and as a business, we've been renowned for doing sport really well. Around the corner is the Cricket World Cup, followed by the Rugby World Cup. That's a pretty good backdrop to maintain real kind of health and interest in the Foxtel kind of product. But then you've got the likes of Big Little Lies, from a lifestyle perspective, picking up Wendy Moore as a new GM to really kind of revitalize the lifestyle brand. So I think you're going to see a number of local productions that really, I suppose, cement people coming on board the Foxtel platform. So from our perspective, looking ahead, I'd say we're very kind of confident in the depth of the slate, sport and non-sport.
And I guess in terms of local commissions, Wentworth mm-hmm. is being pushed right now, for instance.
Yeah, hugely kind of successful. Selling Houses is on currently, 11th, 12th series, continuing to kind of connect and pull in Foxtel customers. So I think we're well set moving forward. There's a lot of plans to reinvigorate some of the kind of channels. A lot of work's been done on Fox 8 as an example recently. And you've seen the viewership of that channel increase on a linear basis. So I think there's plenty more opportunity in the Foxtel slate moving forward.
Can we see any replacement for your money?
Probably not. I'm probably not the right person to answer that one.
And Hannah mentioned Westworld. I remember when the first season came out, it came a little bit from nowhere in terms of being a hit. What are the challenges for when you get a really big hit and by the time it's on air, it must almost be too late for you to really monetize that properly when you don't see it coming down the track.
Yeah, it's an interesting challenge and an interesting opportunity. I think with what we've collectively been speaking about, I think our opportunity is, and this has been one of the benefits of Foxtel, is where does that content go to next? Does it go into the on-demand library? Does it go onto different devices? And therefore, we provide the customer with significantly more opportunities to see it, so it continue to build an audience outside of it initial airing. And then from an advertiser perspective, we can then follow that audience and monetize it ourselves.
Well, next, The Voice is back. The Voice returned to Channel 9 on Sunday night. That's a good place to start this week's ratings chat. Hannah, 7 years in for The Voice, I can still remember it felt like week in and week out on Mumbrella, I was writing about Troubled Nine. And then suddenly The Voice came along and everything changed in that season one. 7 years in, how did it fare?
Yeah, so I know that it's very interesting to hear you talk about Troubled Nine now, isn't it? But yeah, so it's, yeah, kicked back in with its eighth season. They were pushing a bit of a revamped kind of layout for the program, bringing some people back. Guy Sebastian's on board. But unfortunately, it did come in lower than any other season. So it premiered to 1.012 million Metro viewers, which is not bad. But we've had three nights so far, and it has dropped viewers each night. It's still the top entertainment show every night it's on. But it's definitely not hitting Lego Masters figures. It's not touching Mass figures.
How's it doing in the demographics?
It also, yeah, regularly wins the demographics. It's kind of butting heads with MasterChef a little bit. MasterChef, which consistently hits in at that 600,000 Metro viewers. But does quite often take the 16 to 39s. So it's interesting to watch the two of them up against each other. And it's also quite interesting to note, I would say, that when The Voice isn't on air, Seven takes the night every time. Whereas as soon as one of Nine's big shows is on, they get the night. So Seven kind of that quiet, consistent performer, but maybe not hitting those key advertising demographics as they could be.
Well, I suppose the other big ratings night since we recorded last week's Mumbrella Cast was election night. Did you spend the night channel surfing?
Yes, I did, for my sins. Although, like most of Australia, I didn't really tune into Channel 10, which I think they'd be very, very disappointed in the 3% share they got that night.
Yes, I agree that they would be disappointed. And I personally, I must say I didn't watch the election because I had my mother staying, who has about as much political interest as a newborn child. But 10 have got Peter Van Olsen at the moment, who is a very well-respected political brain.
Former
Sky News contributor. And yet they just can't seem to kind of get him there.
I watched the election pretty much from 6 p.m. onwards, and you know we surfed between the channels. But it just says so much about if you're not a brand that's in news and current affairs, you vanish from eyesight. We didn't think to go to 10.
That's
we
exactly right.
Between the networks, on some level I knew that they were doing it, but it just did not occur at the time, so I didn't watch a minute of what was on 10 just because I didn't think they'd be doing news and current affairs.
No, that's exactly right. It did not occur to me to flick over to Channel 10. And on the night, the ABC really dominated. They doubled Nines and really outstripped Seven for the evening.
And it's interesting as well because so just before the election, we saw 10 with their new podcasting platform, 10 Speaks. They launched The Professor and the Hack, which is PBO again and Hugh Remington. I felt at the time like it was very much them trying to say, hello, like we have an election voice. Obviously didn't work. But it will be interesting to see if they keep trying.
Yeah, because it's about consistency, isn't it?
But they have been struggling for a generation with this. This isn't a new problem for 10. I mean, this every few years they seem to try this and then it fizzles out. I recently read Mike Carlton's biography and sure enough, he had a stint of doing that, which ended in tears. Mike Willacy back in the day. So, yeah, every decade or so they try to have a crack at it and go nowhere with it.
Franny, what did you? How did you spend election night?
Oh, it's kind of very loyal to the platform and kind of embracing the Sky News coverage. I've always kind of been a major fan of David Spears and the way he kind of conducts himself on the channel, particularly through the election. And I think from a Sky News perspective, they had a put Game of Thrones to one side for a minute. They had a record-breaking time themselves. So, yeah, Sky News had a good run.
And they had a couple of good calls ahead of the election as well, where it was only one or two Sky News pundits, I think, were the only ones who called it that it might not go Labour's way.
Informed.
Next, Seven's profit warning. So Seven had a profit warning for the market this week. Paul, the share price didn't really move. You normally expect them to kind of fall away, but I was just looking before he came in and, you know, they've actually had a pretty good week. So, which I guess means that it wasn't that much of a surprise to the market.
Yeah, I'm guessing this because you look at the SMI figures, which of course are a trailing indicator on this. They're several months behind where the market is. Probably the stock market had probably priced it into what they were expecting. And what the numbers were was last financial year, it was 235.6 million. And they were forecasting that it'd either be flat or slightly up. The revised profits are 210 to 220 million. So down about 10%, which is probably a little bit more than what the SMI numbers have fallen. They're about 4% year on year, but still it seems the market was prepared for it.
And Franny, I won't ask you to commentate on Arrival. I was talking to somebody from another TV network, and they did make the point when they were looking at how Seven sort of revenue share seems to have held up compared perhaps to audience share, that the market tends to lag. So whenever the market is making its spending decisions, it's probably a few months behind what's actually going on in audience behavior. Is that something you recognize?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think trading behavior does take a bit of time to lag kind of performance. I think to the earlier point, there's no question that the market has been kind of challenged probably all the way back from October last year, and certainly some challenging comparisons without kind of comp games. And that's for the broader industry I'm talking. But final point on going back to the election, I think majority government certainty, hopefully an uptick in business confidence, and those advertisers and brands that have been keeping the hands in the pockets, hopefully we see that open up. And certainly we get a sense of that looking forward, that are we going to be into a period of double digit growth? Probably not, but we're certainly moving out from minus 10 and minus 5, which is only positive.
Are you budgeting for growth of some sort, though?
I think given what I've talked about in terms of where MCN is kind of going, yeah, growth is on our horizon.
Now, Hannah, I can't finish talking about Seven without talking about Temptation Island.
And nor should you. Yeah, to be honest, I think the future is very interesting for Seven from a TV point of view, because not only is Temptation Island coming back after 15 years off the air, which is quite phenomenal. Seven
so for people who don't remember Temptation Island, maybe just talk us through.
So Temptation Island basically is they get a bunch of couples on an island, and then they send in a bunch of sexy singles, and then, you know, the alcohol flows.
Try and split them up.
Yeah. But Seven is really pushing into this romance area. The Proposal is also coming later this year, which appears to everybody as a cross between Married at First Sight and Blind Date. So Seven have obviously seen Married at First Sight, seen, you know, the incredible ratings boost it gave to Nine and the incredible success they've had off the back of it. Maybe the second half of the year will be bright for Seven.
And of course, for they also like the Nine's Love Island and its streaming success. So I guess a dating show with the word island in was attractive as well.
Well, and it almost speaks to, there were kind of those hints earlier in the year. There was a bit of talk about whether Married at First Sight might get its own island at the end of the year. Maybe now that Seven's got an island, we've already had Bachelor in Paradise, which took place on an island. Maybe there'll be more islands in the future.
Franny, how do you feel about the opportunity of those relationship reality shows? Is it something your advertisers have an appetite for?
We haven't got a vision to own an island. Happy with Foxhill and Oxford at the moment, but you never know what's around the corner.
And that is it for this week. Before we go, I hope that it hasn't escaped your notice that Mumbrella 360 is imminent. It's now less than a fortnight away. We're so excited about the Mumbrella 360 program this year, but I can't really sell it all to you here. There's just too much stuff. Although it is worth mentioning, as we're chatting about TV, that we do have a full stream of screen content during the conference, and that includes me interviewing Nine boss Hugh Marks live on stage. So instead, I'm going to ask you to do one thing. Go to mumbrella360.com.au and take a look at the program. Make up your mind once you look at the program. I think it will help you understand why we're not quite like other conferences. That is it from us for this week, though. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Tim.
And thanks, Mark.
Thank you.